Hey guys, Justin Brock here with Medicare Gurus, and today we're bringing another interview of somebody that I've been admiring from afar. That is on Facebook doing some, you know, different things, some cool stuff, and has a lot of momentum and potential ahead of him. Guy by the name of Adam Westfall, and Adam is in the risk management game. He uses, you know, our insurance and financial services field to go into businesses and help. You know, clear up some confusion, free up some capital so that they can better use it to expand and grow their business, and is getting really creative in his approach, which is different than, you know, what I'm seeing in a lot of places. And so I wanted to bring him on here, talk to him, figure out what he's doing. One more plug for him. He is the number one bestseller in the risk management category on Amazon. And so you can check out his book, and I'll let him plug that here in just a minute. But Adam, what's going on, man?
Shoot, man. Just another week ahead of us. Appreciate the intro.
Yeah.
I don't think my book's number one anymore, but it was.
It was. Hey, that's all that counts.
Right.
No, once screenshots. It's like being a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. Once number one, always number one. So yeah, man. So awesome. And I see you're working on some publishing things with books too. And you you shared some stuff just before this call that I'll definitely take and see if it'll help us too. So you definitely learned a lot in that process, you know, but getting back to what you are doing and like what's your approach with businesses, because I think that that's, you know, an interesting thing to unpack, to take the approach to go in and try to help them free up capital, where you're not really saying, hey, I want to rewrite your insurance, even though that could be part of it. You're saying, hey, I want to make sure we're freeing up as much capital as possible. Tell me about that approach and how successful you've been in that.
Well, I initially started in the B2B space. I was just Aflac. That's where I got my start. And I did pretty well with that. And then kind of life circumstances, I kind of drifted more towards the individual side because that seemed like one you could do more remote. And that's kind of just what I wanted to do. I read Jeff Root's book. If you ever read that one, and was like, oh, okay. So I wanted to try that. Went down that route. Medicare seemed like the best option to cross sell with that, because I was doing the final expense thing. So I got kind of did all that. I've worked across all life and health kind of markets, but I came back to the B2B side. What really got me back was last open enrollment season, my buddy and I acquired a book of business for like ACA, individual health insurance people. And you work with some of them, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of people kind of like myself, like small business owners that don't have group coverage. So I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and like, again, that's where I had the most success. Like, it wasn't all those other like sales processes. I was like really scripted and straight line Jordan Belfort. I took that training really good. But working with these people was like all natural for me. I know they were an existing book, but it was like, it was just felt like I was just doing what I knew how to do, like talking to them, just like I used to talk with employees about their major medical and then like the supplemental, the life, the disability that they could get to. And so I was like, I think I am better off working kind of with people more like myself.
Do what you love. You never work a day in your life. So you don't want to spend all your time, you know, replicating a process that you don't enjoy. And so, when I'm talking to people locally, the only friends that I can really resonate with outside of the insurance world are people that own businesses locally, because they understand, you know, what we do or a little bit more, or they get like the process of owning your own business and going out and eating what you kill. And so I think probably when you're having that conversation, you're more often going to find people in that are like we are. So,
yeah. And I like, there was a lot of, cause I came from doing the group side of things. So like, that was my first kind of sales process. So with them, like, they needed short-term disability, which was like a thing that I thrived on in the group side of things. Like, that was an easy cross sell. Like, you just, oh, we got you a discount. Why don't you add some you know, your bills cut from 600 a month to 60 a month, you should probably get some short-term disability. Is like, it's pretty easy. Yeah. And a lot of them don't have like any retirement plan in place because they just never set one up because there's nobody getting commissions off of those things. So you have to actually go and physically set up like a self-directed or a solo, just so you gotta, I don't know. It was fun working with it, but that's also, you need a lot of people to scale that thing. And then got to hire people. So, which I'll do that down the road, but you know, one of your, you posted it, I think a couple months ago in your group chat, you said you're paid based off the value you bring. And I was like, damn right.
Yeah.
So how do I do that? And so I just kind of started doing more research and digging in. It's a really good book I read. You read The Wedge?
No.
Really good. This guy's, so I have it in here. This one.
The Wedge. Who's the author?
Randy Schwantz. He's more of a, you learn a lot from the property and casualty guys, because that is a whole nother ballgame. Like their tech and all their stuff is like years ahead of the health insurance. I think
they've evolved it because when you think about who, okay, I want to sell a product that everybody needs, and PNC fits that more, whereas health and life and Medicare, there's a lot of diversity in that, you know, and so.
Right. Well, that and like PNC's worldwide. That's yeah. You know, so, and a lot of those guys do life, but specifically health insurance guys, they're like the most hesitant people to try and cross sell things like they should. But, yeah. But I learned I got an ad popped up. I watched his hour webinar and was like, what's this guy? And then like all his books are super expensive, but like probably the most valuable books on like insurance agency building. And so the Wedge was really just, it kind of opened me up to thinking like, okay, going in with insurance, like to a, cause I've been there with the B2B kind of thing is,
yeah,
is just, like once you represent yourself as that is, I mean, it's like a real estate agent. It's like, you can't tell the difference, right? So what kind of wedge are you going to drive between them and their broker? Like everyone's going to say better, you know, better coverage, lower price type of deal, but everyone's affiliated with the same brokers or the same insurance companies. Like, yeah, if you've had more experience, maybe you have like your CIC, you can get some prices cut, but really it kind of opened me up as I was digging in and just talking with people. I do that a lot. I go down rabbit holes and just kind of get in touch with people all over the place. And the idea of risk management came up. I was like, well, my book was number one bestseller in risk management. And it makes a lot of sense because like when you do your insurance license, the first thing it tells you is like insurance is the transfer of risk. Mm-hmm. So digging more into risk management and kind of what you can do is there's a huge problem in businesses, both on the PNC side, which actually more so when you talk about total cost of risk, that's kind of the metric that you go for in risk management. People typically just quantify it by like what your premiums are and then like your loss runs if you're doing PNC or yeah. Healthcare is a little different. That's more just straight up. There's like an HR budget that they have that each person is this much, whatever. Okay. I don't do PNC yet. Actively looking for someone that can help with that. But I kind of just dug in and was like, how can I figure out how to bring that to the table? And just kind of came across more people, came across some software where the biggest issue for someone in a C-suite position, like at a bigger company, is the bottom line, right? It's like profitability. Mm-hmm. So that's what they want to know. Everyone's saying we can do this, 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 and just like kind of bullshitting like a salesperson, but not really putting their money where their mouth is, like showing somebody on paper, well, here's your losses, like your direct losses and your premiums, and maybe your admin, your taxes. A lot of people, bigger companies have like self-insured programs. but they're not able to quantify really like the indirect loss costs, which is actually way bigger and something that you can more so knock down, because like health insurance premiums aren't going down. That's going up every year. Right. So if we're focusing on the cost of health insurance, like, you know, it's, and there's a lot of nitpicky things in the group game that I had to come back and learn again. But like, you can't, if you have a broker record and then you allow another broker to go like shop rates for you, and the carrier finds out that there's multiple brokers shopping for you, and your broker record was this person, like they won't give you those discounts. Like, there's all these little rules on that. I don't even want to play that price game. Like, yeah. And so we come back to like the impact of a business. Like, if, you know, we talk about the EBITDA, and like, you got to get educated and understand financials and know how to read a financial statement. And basically look at how much financial leakage they have based off of their industry, their typical profit margins, kind of run an estimate. And then you more so figure out solutions, really be a business consultant. And in the group game, there's not just the insurance piece, and that's not even what I represent myself as. I'm just finding out like what their business goals are, and, you know, figuring out what's holding them back. What's just really figuring out everything that's going on in the business, because you need to know what's going on with the HR. You need to know what's going on with the CFO, with the risk management team, if they have one, because, you know, you're pretty savvy with marketing and knowing that stuff too. And just, I guess, business operations within your own business, which I have too, and I used to. There's other things that you can bring to the table as well that they might not be seeing, you know, as a consultant. So it's good to come in from the outside. So not only can you provide that value, I can provide, you know, HR technology solutions, which is a big hot button issue right now for, I think the bigger companies have it, but a lot of the, I don't know, right in the middle kind of companies, maybe like 250 to 500, still don't have like a good onboarding software system that tracks payroll, keeps them like in compliance with ACA and everything. So like, that's a solution that you partner up with the right, you know, GA or somebody, or you got a good connection, you could bring that service in for like free. And so you could probably eliminate like two HR jobs and like have better software. And as everybody's going remote and everything, like, it just makes sense. But a lot of people won't implement it, because like, you get stuck in your business and, oh, we've done it this way. So you can't really talk about that with HR. Like, to them, you're trying to appeal to like, let's make the job better. To a CFO, it's like, let's cut some costs and let's be more efficient with the business. So you really,
we've run into this where like, you know, it a lot of insurance agents, and there, you know, obviously there are some legalities in individual insurance sales, and like when you do consulting fee based stuff, but with businesses it can be completely different. And so we ran into a group insurance company, and now we're starting to look for other ones that they want to introduce us to their large groups and medium sized groups to come in and do Medicare education. And a lot of these are like the, they're the stop loss insurer for self-insured groups.
Yep.
And you come in and you do Medicare education. And so legally you can't, you know, entice them to get off,
right,
but you can educate them. And if they decide that they're better off on their own accord going, you know, getting off of the group plan, then that can save the group a lot of money.
Yep.
But what we found is the groups and the insurance companies are willing to pay us consulting fees to do it, whether they sign up or not. You know, because you might think like, well, I'm going to go in, but you know, a lot of these people that are getting free coverage are just going to say, well, I'm not going to do it. But they're paying us like per member or per employee per month consulting fees or fee-based model, just to keep those education-based things going. So it is interesting, like when you talk about getting creative in what you bring to the table, and not just being, okay, I'm a Medicare supplement swapper, or I'm an ACA plan swapper, or I'm a, you know,
in there,
because then you're pigeonholing yourself to, you know, what, and I'm not saying, you know, for somebody to not find a vertical, like if Medigap shopping or, you know, turning 65 Medicare is an initial vertical. That's great. Build a vertical, scale it hard and fast, maybe build a team or whatever, but scale it, create some residual revenue. And then think, how can I horizontally or vertically scale where I have another income stream, you know? And so for us, that became like consulting agents, consulting call centers, and, you know, and then we have our course sales and books. And so we're marketing in different ways, and all just feeds into the same thing. But I always called those like horizontal scales, where they're in the same vertical. They're in the same vertical. So I'm not like going to a different, you know, industry altogether, although I do some of that, like with real estate, but it's not, you know, I'm just saying, okay, hey, this is another way I can support more people within the same space. And some of those opportunities, if you get out and you meet people, you start, they like that one with the stop loss insurers, you know, that was came from speaking at NAHU conventions and just meeting people. And, you know, and I'm telling you, man, like you get into the NAHU conventions are full of group health guys, and they do a lot of their pay does come from fee based already. It's not all just insurance commissions.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting, you know, that it's a different, different mindset than a lot of the ones that I talk to, you know, but, you know, it's something to, you know, consider that like you could say, hey, I'm a group health guy. I do Medicare, and then you could go in, and this is, and even group health guys will pigeonhole themselves sometimes where they're just like, all I do is try to shop the group health and do the ancillary benefits. I don't do Medicare. Why not?
You know? Right. You know, and every time, like, and that's most people, in my opinion, especially on the group side, I'd say health insurance is like the most behind. So like I was in group, I came over to start doing individual, and I thought I was getting ahead of everybody else. I was like, yeah, it's not that easy. To ads are expensive. SEO is not easy. Not as easy as I thought. So I'm like, it's actually the people on the group side that could use all that. And so I think I can bring that skill set back. But yes, they do pigeonhole themselves. And a lot of them I talk to, they've hit me with like the, you know, you need to just stick to one thing. You're jack of all trades, master none. I was just like, you just sound like you don't do anything in your free time. Yeah. I'm obsessed with this. Yeah. Like I stay up all night researching stuff. Like I'm confident in what I'm doing, but you get that a lot.
You're looking for it. And I don't think that, I think that they're like, so if you say there's riches and niches, I mean, you could say that the risk management is a niche. I mean, you're not saying I'm going to buy a house tomorrow to rent out, and I'm going to flip a house over here later, and then I'm gonna talk to some people about their group benefits, and then I think I'm gonna start a t-shirt company. Yeah, that's too distracted and too far out, and you're not able to dive deep enough into one thing. But if you can think, you know, macroeconomically about a niche, risk management, and then say, well, what feeds into risk management, and then just take that. I don't think that's necessarily spreading yourself too thin or becoming a jack of all trades. It's becoming, you know, a master of a broader niche rather than
you kind of have to do that. Like, if you're going to be talking with people at the high levels, like you need to at least speak the language of different departments. Like, you know, I don't really like doing accounting, but I know what everything means. I might not be able to, you know, crunch the numbers as great, but like I can speak to them and talk to them on their level and talk, you know, all the way down to, you know, the entry level people.
Yeah. You can get into the accounts receivable terminology and all that kind of stuff. Because so if I'm running my own business and it's an insurance related business, I don't learn the same accounting, like my own personal accounting that I have to do. You learn some of the terminology, but then you get into one where they actually have an inventoried product. There's a different level of accounting. You're talking, it sells a product income and accounts receivable, and in, you know, and the actual inventory itself is a different type of thought. And so if I'm going to be serving a business that does that or has that, I need to understand it, even though it's not really part of my business.
Right. And like, that's where a good PNC guy could, like they would focus a little bit more on something like that.
Yeah.
Like they would know what all that means. Like my dad, he's a supply chain consultant. He knows about all that stuff. I don't know what he's talking about. Like I do, but like
Oh, man, it gets crazy. Like when we go, because I've done some advisory board stuff for insurance companies, and just getting to the insurance company and understanding their thought process is different than the broker thought process. A lot of us, a lot of times you see these people putting stuff on the internet and it's like, well, this is what's best for the client. This was best for the client. You have to understand that it works both ways. Like, you know, an insurance company going bankrupt would be good for some clients, the ones that were on the receiving end of the payouts, but the entire insurance company going bankrupt is not really good for the insurance world. So, you know, I want to do like, how can I manage that risk in a way where I'm, you know, partnering and trying to help an insurance company grow and manage their risk while trying to help the clients as well. And individual health is like the only part of insurance where they don't expect you to do any risk. Like they're not paying you on loss ratios. So, but like you get into PNC, you get into group health, even, you know, they might look at some of that overall, you know, because they're going to, and I'm not saying group health is necessarily paying you on it. I'm not sure if they do, but I know on PNC that they have bonuses.
Yep. They do
for, you know, keeping your loss ratios down. But in health, we're just kind of like, oh, you have cancer, you need this. And I'm like, yes, I have to do, like I have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that they do the best. But I also want to understand the implication of maybe spreading that risk a little bit, because, you know, if I say, like, if I have 10 Medicare supplement companies and they're all, you know, in the top 10 of rates, and somehow I get 10 kidney dialysis patients that come in and open enrollment in a row, do I really want to stick them all with Aetna? Do I really want to stick them all with me? Like, I don't know. Do I value those companies? Because, you know, if the rates are marginally different, maybe I spread that risk over them. That way I'm not screwing them all over. Now, some people might say that they throw it all at one company that they dislike, but that's a whole nother topic. But you do have to understand that you're, you know, I don't work for the company. I work for the client is a common thing that we hear in Medicare, but the company pays you. And so the 1099s have the company's name on them, not the client's. And so I have to make sure that I'm understanding that the value that I bring to the company is very important as well, you know, and that should be a little bit of a balancing act that maybe tips a little bit in favor of the client, but because the big bad insurance companies are supposedly can afford it. But, you know, we need to understand that we're partners of both. So I would almost encourage people to quit saying, I don't work for the insurance company. And I'm guilty of saying this too, but I should say, listen, I am the seesaw between the two of you. We need the insurance companies to be strong, because when things like that have happened in the past, these massive, you know, catastrophic economic solutions or pandemics or whatever happened, the insurance companies are the ones that get left holding the bill. You know, in the Great Depression, the only completely solvent industry was the insurance industry. And it was because they were cash heavy, but they needed to be through that period. And so we have to understand that they're important as well. It's not just me helping the consumer versus the big, bad, evil insurance empire. So,
and that's where you get into it, right? It's like most people in it are salespeople, like just, and they're just salespeople. And that's like, who I'm usually talking to is not business people. Like, you got to get into the show me on paper. Like, show me, don't just tell me this is good for me, show me. And that's when you talk to people when it's business, which is why I kind of went back that route, is because it's just, I can speak that and it just makes more sense. Like,
when they know that the insurance company, a business person knows the insurance company has to make money too. Whereas you're dealing with, sometimes I'm dealing with a Medicare beneficiary, and the Medicare beneficiary is, you know, he's got all kinds of jacked up problems. And so, like, we had one the other day, you know, this happens like all the time, but like you got a guy, one of our agents helping a couple, and the husband is in really bad health. Well, the wife, we were able to rewrite and save money on her supplement. And the husband, you're telling, well, in your current health, I would stay right where you're at. And he wasn't paying some astronomical rate, but maybe it was $40 or $50 more a month than another one. And he's just sitting there, you know, like, you know, borderline crying, you know, this ain't right what they do to Medicare beneficiaries. And I'm like, but you're covered and it's costing you extra $40 or $50 a month. But that individual, I bet, never owned a business or anything like that. So
Was he in poor health, or he just
it was poor health, so he just couldn't be underwritten to save money over what he had. Like, it's not like his rate was so high that some substandard rating would have saved him money. Mm-hmm. But they say that kind of stuff, like, it ain't right that I have to pay 40 or 50. Whereas, you know, an hour before we called him, he didn't even know that other rate existed, and he was fine with it. But it becomes like a woe is me. I need the cheapest thing no matter what. Health shouldn't be a part of it. And you could get into arguing whether that's true or not. But I find that the states that have guaranteed issue laws anyway, the rates are just higher for everybody. So they, you know, the insurance companies still have a number they have to hit, regardless of whether they use community rated, attained age, issue age, underwriting. All those are tools to try to balance, like, who pays what. Mm-hmm. But if you take the power away from the insurance company to do that, they're just going to jack their rates up across the board, you know?
Yeah.
So
it gets harder to be good at doing that kind of salesmanship when you start knowing all this, because, like, naturally I want to educate somebody, like, well, here's why they're not doing that, and, like, it's like this. And yeah. So
yeah, and that's why in Medicare, you know, what we end up having to say, the individual salesperson that's focusing on Medicare or individual health, a lot mm-hmm. of times they end up just saying, yeah, I know, it's, you know, yeah, it's a shame, you know. It's not a shame. Like, we understand it, but do I get into educating them on it? And I want to,
right.
Being a teacher, you know, right, tell exactly. You like, this is the way it is, and this is why it is. But do I want them to be my enemy? I just want them to buy something from me. So, you know, and so we end up saying that. And that's why it's the same thing, like with politics, when people say, you know, yep, thanks Obama or thanks Trump or whatever. And they just, like, let's just pass the buck to those people, no matter what I really believe. Mm-hmm. Because it gets that hot potato out of my hands. But mm-hmm. I hate that, because, and so, like, what you're saying, when you're having conversations with people that understand, you know, more often the middle ground there, that there's is a business, you know, transaction and conversation, and both sides have to make money. And it's okay that somebody makes money off of my transference of risk, just like it's okay that somebody manufactures a product for less than they sell it to me for. It is okay right. that somebody else makes a profit in something. It shouldn't always be about how can I weasel somebody out of something that I get a better, you know, return on.
So yeah, you see that quite often, and you see it also maybe not just in business, but just like someone sees you getting something, you see it like with the affiliate marketing, like, use my link, get 50% off discount, but
yeah,
you're getting paid off that, like,
yeah,
you're still getting a 50% off discount.
I know, exactly. Like, who cares?
But, you know, I got friends who would rather go find it from a stranger and use it. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
I'm learning from that, though. I'm learning from it.
Yeah.
So,
there's information that makes you, you know, get in my feelings or in my head. Like, how mm-hmm. do I feel about that? Who cares? It doesn't really matter how I feel about it. How can I use it to improve the end result for myself ethically and, you know, and legally? Mm-hmm. That's, you know, and I mean, I was having this conversation with some people yesterday. You just, you know, that's how I'm always thinking, is not about how does X make me feel? How do I feel about, you know, politics or blah, 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 or the way sales goes or the way a company's doing something? It doesn't matter. If they're doing it and they're allowed to do it, then, you know, I have to navigate that to the right. best of my ability to make my team, my office, my family mm-hmm. better off, you know? And as long as I'm doing it legally and ethically, then that's all that matters.
Right. And that's just the role of leadership. Like, you just have to know, like, over time, like, it sucks at first when you're not used to having that criticism or maybe bearing that burden, but you just kind of, you learn. It's always nice to have mentorship. So people can tell you that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you don't let it take you off your course. So I think I've been blessed to have that in my life yeah. over my years. Like,
and it's graduating mentorship too, which mm-hmm. brings up like this other topic that I'm dealing with now. Like, sometimes you'll have a mentor that'll help you get somewhere.
Yep.
But then you'll outgrow that. Mm-hmm. And you almost have to start looking for the next, you know, level. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the mentor that helped you in the beginning, it ends up being the one that tells you that you're, oh, you're becoming a jack of all trades now, a master of none.
Yep, that's exactly what happened.
Might not be true. Like, it might be like, hey, you helped me learn this, but I'm moving, and I've dealt with that same thing, like where, because one of my early mentors would have been my dad, you know, to some degree. There's things that I was learning from him, but then there was a graduating process where it was like, he's thinking much smaller than I am.
Yeah.
And he's even known that now, because I've gone so far past it where it's like, he comes back and he'll just say stuff like, well, you know, you're real smart. You just keep doing what you're doing, you know. But and I'm sitting, and I'm not like in a condescending way, but you know, of course that helps me. That's like the best thing he can say now, is because I'm like, okay, he's giving me the confidence that, you know, even though I think I'm on the right track, if he says, hey, you sound smart and I don't know, then I'm like, that's actually all I need. Just tell me that. Gives me that little boost, like, okay, I'm heading in the right direction, because he's not telling me to stop doing it anymore. But then as I mentor someone, I should know that. And I think I've even done this, like where sometimes I almost want to shut down, like, oh, don't.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be like, look, I don't know. Like, just cause it's not what I would do in here doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. You know, now there are some things that are flat out wrong, but there are some things that, you know, just because somebody's going in X direction and it's not exactly where I went already, doesn't mean that I should mentor them to not do that. So you and I should learn, as we're mentoring other people, to just be careful about, you know, what we
shut
other people down.
I've come across those same like thoughts and you know, what you realize too is a lot of people, when they give advice, they're speaking off of their own experience. Like they tell you to do exactly what they did, but I mean,
yeah,
I think it's just natural for them to do that.
Yeah. They had infinite numbers of factors that went into them thinking that way. And, you know, and we have an infinite number of other factors that go into the way that we think. And so, you know, there's not on so many topics, there's not a yes or a no answer, or right or wrong. There's, you know, I don't know yet. You know, I mean, okay, just to give you an example. If I was Elon Musk's mentor, I would have been a terrible mentor for him, because I'd be like, don't do that. That's a bad idea. Nope, don't do that. But it'd be because I don't understand what the hell is in his head. You know, it doesn't, it's different. He's, you know, and so there, I'm sure he got told that a million times, you know, by people like, oh, that's a bad idea.
I've kind of come to realize, like, it's kind of, because I've heard it in places, like when you're reading books on, you know, how to be wealthy or, you know, leveling up, you're going to hear stuff like that. Yeah. You're going to hear these, just like in sales, you hear like the same four common, you know, objections to something, right? It's the same thing. Like most people are the same. Yeah. So I'm just, yeah, it's still, we're emotional, right? Like I'm as much as I've been accused of not being, we all are, unless you're a sociopath, but
I told somebody this morning, men are emotional. They're just, handle things typically, or not all men, some are very emotional, but men just handle things more stoically. And so it, like, you know, because I probably get accused of that from females more, of not being emotional or not having that empathy, that default empathy. But sometimes I have the empathy, like I understand it.
It's macro empathy, because it's like that the problem that they're upset about is like, yeah, I just couldn't see myself really being too bothered by that.
Right. Right. Yeah. I completely struggle with that. And, you know, and showing it, you know, and maybe I should show it more. I don't know, but it's not that I don't have the empathy that it's an issue for somebody else. You know, that's a constant try. I get accused of that a lot, but I think it's just because we handle things more stoically. Like we're saying, I'm taking that information and saying, okay,
but
I put myself in a better situation.
Where's the empathy for how you're feeling about this situation, right?
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. Everybody is, and I don't know if this is the right word, but like that ethnocentric, where they're seeing it from their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I get accused of not seeing it from their eyes, I'm like, yeah, but you don't see it from my eyes either.
So. Right. Well, and that's like, I can't remember. I think it was you know who Jeb Blunt is?
I know the name for sure. I've probably read stuff.
I think he's from the South. He might be from Georgia. He got I think you got a bunch of good sales books. I'm trying to find it. I know I got this one. Like, I think this one right here, this is where he talks about it. I think sales EQ.
Oh yeah. I definitely know Jeb Blunt. I just don't, I don't know if I've specifically read anything. I know I've at least read quotes and stuff from that and heard it referenced before.
He came and did a training for us, like for the Oregon, like top Aflac people. It was pretty cool. But he talked about empathy. Like, you got to have like the balance, because like, if you're too empathetic, you get emotional about everything and you can't like push past, like you're worried about inconveniencing somebody or disrupting them.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to be just too like competitive where someone, you know, says something, you just jump right into, you know, solution.
Then you're like capitalizing on people's, you know, like there's a balance between like, you know, capitalizing on, you know, somebody else's situation,
mm-hmm.
You know, where you have this empathy versus, you know, competitiveness. I was just at a conference where they were talking about some of this and the empathy side. Like, I want to have empathy where, you know, I can understand when somebody's got a bad situation and I want them to do better and I want to help them. And I want to be a person that, you know, uses my wealth accumulation or influence mm-hmm. accumulation to put other people in a better situation. And I think that's part of having empathy. If you have zero empathy, you turn into a sociopath, like you said. But then I just want my competitors to be almost just a little bit more so that it can round out that empathy to be like, okay, but how can I take that information and put people that I care about and, you know, people that I'm helping in a better situation, not at the expense of anyone else, because that would be the part where that you're too competitive, but mm-hmm. where it's not crippling you. So I'm assuming that's what he's talking about there, like that you don't want the empathy to cripple your response to stuff.
Yeah. And like, yeah, men are typically less empathetic, but you can still like learn and develop some skills that comes from like communicating and like meeting people and knowing their tendencies. So like,
yeah.
People repeat the same behaviors when things happen. You can change your approach. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's all the stuff. A lot of shit is wordplay that you see in like the media. Like you see abolish the police here in Portland. It's like, well, it just is such an extreme statement that one side is all for it. The other side is like way against it. But it's like, I don't think that's what either side really means. Like, I think there really is the middle ground.
I think there's an extreme emotional response and an extreme mm-hmm. logical response. And
they phrase it
like, hey, like, I understand you guys have some points, but neither side seems to be willing to come together on it, especially the irrational emotional side.
Mm-hmm.
They're so empathetic, they can't even really see past their calls sometimes. So
mm-hmm.
it sucks. But, man, we got some heavy stuff. So, I enjoyed, you know, talking to you and enjoyed having you on. And I think you're taking a different approach that, you know, could be very useful. And I could see areas where things that'll come up for me that I might reach out to you and collaborate on. If anybody else wants to, you know, collaborate with you or get in touch with you or buy your book, where can they find you?
If you go to Amazon.com and you search Adam Westfall, I got two books up there. One as the digital insurance agent book. And then the other one is the retirement game plan book. And then if you go to my website, I got two of them, westfallinsurance.com. That's more that's my Medicare senior health website. And then my newer one is Westfall. It's actually just wfrisk.com.
Or just,
you know, in your Facebook group or,
on Facebook.
I'm around.
Well, if you guys need anything or you think there's some overlap or questions you have, reach out to Adam. He's a cool guy. He's always been very responsive on Facebook to stuff, helpful, he's pretty straightforward. So anything you ever need help with in his arena, I'm sure he'd be willing to collaborate. And go over and check out his book, guys, because, I mean, honestly, you know, we buy all kinds of books and weird stuff out there, but for, you know, $10 to be able to buy $10, $15, $20 to be able to buy people's books on Amazon and support other people in the industry. I'm a believer in it. I buy pretty much everybody's books, and I don't know if I've bought both of Adam's. I have one of his here, but I'm going to go buy the other one right now.
Which one did you get?
I have the first one you did, retirement one, the first one.
Yeah.
Because when I first looked you up, I went and found, before you even were talking about your publishing stuff, and I had talked to you about that earlier and got invited to your group, I had looked you up and saw that you had a book. And I did the same thing before I'd even talked to like Christian Brendel. I'd bought his book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a book buyer. I bought all David Ford's books. Like some of them, I to be perfectly honest, I'll buy with the intention of reading and then they'll sit on my shelf. But I've been trying to, when I wrote one, I started respecting the process a little more. And so now I'm really going back and reading them. Like I just read Patrick Lencioni's book, and the process of getting engulfed in a book, like you learn more from that. And I think it's because the commitment that it takes to digest the information, you really learn it. Whereas you can throw on a YouTube video sometimes and burn through it and you can pick up like one or two little things, but it's not, doesn't concrete it in the way that a book read is like an experience. So
yeah, if I'm reading like nonfiction, because I read 95% nonfiction, I'm taking notes at the same time. I probably read like at least two books a week. Usually business focused, but
when they say leaders are readers, and what do they say, the top CEOs in the country read 60 books a year or something like that. So
if you download the new app where you can read 100 books a day,
100 books a day,
I don't know. Like just take the main points, I think is what they're going to try and tell you to do. But that's one of my, like, I think as far as impact goes, just because it, you know, you kind of set goals and then you realize when you hit them, at least in my eyes, like when I hit them, I'm like, I should have shot for higher. Like when I wrote the book, it was number two bestseller. And I was like, I wasn't thinking in that direction, but now I am. And so like, it takes you to the next place. And so as far as impact goes, like people like us who do insurance or like real estate, other types of like consulting / like you do your own thing and you need to get clients. And like a book is a really unique way to do that. And I think a lot of people think it's out of reach for them, but it's actually not. There is a format to it where you can do it quickly. And then there's those tools that I've gone in and found where you can figure out how to make it a number one bestseller, give yourself best chance. So my impact would, you know, I'd like to hit a goal like helping 1,000 people become, you know, bestsellers.
Yeah.
I think that'd just be like cool.
Well, if you're wanting to write a book, man, I don't think there's a lot of people, you know, more well suited for it that could probably help. And you'd actually get the proper amount of attention for than Adam Westfall. So you guys, if you're looking to write one and go about it the right way, hit him up. And Adam, until next time, brother, appreciate you.
All right, man. Home. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye. We'll be right back.